On the afternoon of a bright early summer's day in June 1798, the 73-year-old librarian de Count Waldstein died in his rooms overlooking the forecourt of Dux Castle in Bohemia. He was found in his armchair, next to which lay his unpublished memoirs. The librarian was Giacomo Casanova, the self-styled Chevalier de Seingalt, and his memoirs were published much later as The Story of My Life. Finding himself in 1785 without either employment or a home, Casanova had accepted Waldstein's offer of the post of librarian at Dux Castle, and it was here he resided until his death, longer than anywhere else in his life. During his time there he wrote prolifically on matters of economics, mathematics, and philosophy, a science fiction novel, a large number of letters, and most notably, his autobiography. It's clear that Casanova's memoirs are incomplete. They break off abruptly in 1774. Happily for us, however, it's his earlier years, in which he lived with a prodigious energy and appetite, which are the more interesting. In the preface to his memoirs, he sets out his intentions. I have reached, in 1797, the age of 70 years and 12. I cannot say vixi, and I could not procure a more agreeable pastime than to relate my own adventures, and to cause pleasant laughter amongst the good company listening to me, from which I have received so many tokens of friendship, and in the midst of which I have ever lived. To enable me to write well, I have only to think that my listeners will belong to that polite society. If what I have said is pleasing, it is down to the listener. Should there be a few intruders whom I cannot prevent from perusing my memoirs, I must find comfort in the idea that my history was not written for them. By recollecting the pleasures I have had formerly, I renew them. I enjoy them a second time, while I laugh at the remembrance of troubles now past and which I no longer feel. A member of this great universe, I speak to the air, and I fancy myself rendering an account of my administration, as a steward is wont to do before leaving his situation. For my future I have no concern, and as a true philosopher I never would have any, for I know not what it may be. As a Christian, on the other hand, faith must believe without discussion, and the stronger it is, the more it keeps silent. I know that I have lived because I have felt, and feeling giving me the knowledge of my existence, I know likewise that I shall exist no more when I shall have ceased to feel. The name of Giacomo Casanova has become synonymous with serial womanizing. While, as his own account shows, his libertine lifestyle does justify this, in his autobiography there are sexual liaisons with well over 100 women. There is much more to him than the philandering rogue which is most remembered today. Ironically, although the number of romantic affairs in his lifetime may have been above average for the day, it is overshadowed by several of his contemporaries. But what marks out Casanova is his frank account of his liaisons, his interest in the chase, and perhaps surprisingly, in romantic relationships, short-lived as they often prove to be. In his autobiography, he is unabashed in detailing his sexual encounters, as freely as he tells of his other adventures and travels. One example is Casanova's encounter with Lucrezia Castelli. What sweet recollections that villa has left in my memory! It seemed as if I saw my divine Lucrezia for the first time. Our looks were full of ardent love. Our hearts were beating in concert with the most tender impatience, and a natural instinct was leading us towards a solitary asylum which the hand of love seemed to have prepared on purpose for the mysteries of its secret worship. There, in the middle of a long avenue, and under a canopy of thick foliage, we found a wide sofa made of grass and sheltered by a deep thicket. From that place our eyes could range over an immense plain, and view the avenue to such a distance right and left that we were perfectly secure against any surprise. We did not require to exchange one word at the sight of this beautiful temple so favourable to our love. Our hearts spoke the same language. Without a word being spoken, our ready hands soon managed to get rid of all obstacles and to expose in a state of nature all the beauties which are generally veiled by troublesome wearing apparel. 2 whole hours were devoted to the most delightful, loving ecstasies. At last we exclaimed together in mutual ecstasy, "Oh, love, we thank thee!" Few men can have lived as full a life as Casanova. After studies in law, moral philosophy, mathematics and chemistry, Casanova was originally destined for the priesthood, a career cut short by his brief imprisonment for indebtedness. Casanova took to gambling from a young age, something he pursued, often with disastrous consequences, throughout his life. He then became an army officer and was based in Corfu, but his military career also proved to be brief. After a failed attempt at becoming a professional gambler, Casanova then worked as an orchestral violinist, an occupation he described as that of a menial journeyman. Fortune intervened when Casanova saved the life of the Venetian senator Bragada, under whose tutelage he lived for 3 years, ostensibly as a legal assistant, until he was forced to leave Venice due to a series of scandals. Casanova had been a subject of interest to the Venetian Inquisition for State Security, and this intensified on his return to his native city in 1753, eventually resulting in his imprisonment without trial for a question of religion. He spent over a year in the formidable Leads prison, so called because the cells were directly under the lead roof of the Doge's palace in which the prison was located. Having made an audacious escape, along with a priest, Father Balbi, who occupied an adjacent cell, Casanova then headed for Paris. The story of my flight gives Casanova's account of this escape, and became extremely popular on its publication in 1787. The door opened, and the poor man, as soon as he saw me, seemed turned to stone. Without an instant's delay and in dead silence, I made haste to descend the stairs, the monk following me. Avoiding the appearance of a fugitive, but walking fast, I went by the giant stairs, taking no notice of Father Balbi, who kept calling out, "To the church! To the church!" The church door was only about 20 paces from the stairs, but the churches were no longer sanctuaries in Venice, and no one ever took refuge in them. The monk knew this, but fright had deprived him of his faculties. He told me afterwards that the motive which impelled him to go to the church was the voice of religion bidding him seek the horns of the altar. "Why didn't you go by yourself?" said I.
"I did not like to abandon you."
But he should rather have said, "I did not like to lose the comfort of your company." The safety I sought was beyond the borders of the Republic, and thitherward I began to bend my steps. Already there in spirit, I must needs be there in body also. I went straight towards the chief door of the palace, and looking at no one that might be tempted to look at me, I got to the canal and entered the first gondola that I came across, shouting to the boatman on the poop, "I want to go to Fusina, be quick, and call another gondolier." This was soon done, and while the gondola was being got off, I sat down on the seat in the middle and Balbi at the side. The odd appearance of the monk, without a hat and with a fine cloak on his shoulders, with my unseasonable attire, was enough to make people take us for an astrologer and his man. Once in Paris, Casanova came under the patronage of Cardinal de Berny, whom he had first met in Venice when they shared a mistress, and who by this time had become the French foreign minister. Casanova was involved in setting up the first state lottery, from which he earned a small fortune. In France he came into contact with some of the foremost figures of the day, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, Madame de Pompadour, chief mistress of King Louis XV, and Voltaire, Casanova was sent on his first mission as a spy to Dunkirk, for which he was well remunerated, money always being a source of concern for a man with the Chevalier's expensive tastes. He made further money from his involvement in selling French state bonds in Amsterdam, used the money to set up a silk factory, on which the fortune was quickly lost through mismanagement, the consequent debts resulting in a further short stay in prison. He then travelled widely throughout Europe, never staying long in one place. He tried, unsuccessfully, to sell his state lottery idea to the English, and through his connections met King George III. He then travelled to the Austrian Netherlands and Russia, in both instances pitching his state lottery idea, each time without success. Wherever he went, he made good use of his connections and obtained audiences with Frederick the Great, Catherine the Great, and subsequently King Charles III of Spain. Famously, he was injured in a duel, inevitably over a woman, with the Polish Count Brynitzky, and came close to losing his left hand. In 1774, after an absence of 18 years, he was permitted to return to Venice and, with some reluctance, became a spy for the state of Venice. However, there seemed to be fewer opportunities, financial or otherwise, and in 1783 Casanova found himself once again expelled from his home city for writing a satire on the Venetian nobility. Back in Paris, he met Benjamin Franklin, before becoming secretary to Sebastian Foscarini, Venetian ambassador in Vienna. It was when Foscarini died that the offer of employment came from Count Waldstein. And though Casanova did make occasional trips to Vienna, Dresden, and Prague, he was at the premieres of Mozart's operas Don Giovanni and La Clemenza di Tito. It was at Dux he saw out the rest of his days. Through the book, he paints joyous and colourful pictures of the life of an 18th-century adventurer, amongst aristocrats, nuns, gamblers and card-sharps, ballet girls and theatricals, all manner of characters he met as he won and lost fortunes, romanced and gossiped his way across Europe. His friend in Bohemia, the Prince de Ligne, ascribed to Casanova the final words, "I have lived as a philosopher, but die as a Christian." Whether true or not, Casanova gives us a glimpse into his outlook on life, again in the preface to his memoirs. "The chief business of my life has always been to indulge my senses. I never knew anything of greater importance. I felt myself born for the fair sex. I have ever loved it dearly, and I have been loved by it as often and as much as I could. I have likewise always had a great weakness for good living, and I ever felt passionately fond of every object which excited my curiosity.